All right, g'day Novacastrians, and welcome to your Round 20 Jetstream Preview episode, which sees the Jets travelling to Homebush to take on the Western Sydney Wanderers in the A-League. We're also going to cover off news as well as the Jets W League team semi-final loss to Sydney FC. This is Ferns back in the hosting chair after a long absence when my equipment suddenly decided to stop working. Now using an actual headset to take part, but unfortunately the recording is still having to be handled by Dave, as we found out 5 minutes before we went live. Thanks for joining me, Dave. How are you going?
Happy anniversary, mate. How are you?
Yes, mate. I'm really good, and it's good that you mentioned that, because it's appropriate you're here, because this episode takes place on the third year. It marks the anniversary of the third year since we relaunched this podcast, adding more contributors, more shows, as well as a fantastic series, which a few people might have heard, chronicling the 2008 grand final season journey. So, mate, it's been a fantastic experience for me personally, as I wasn't sure if I was ever going to get this little venture to grow into something worth continuing on with. I had actually considered shutting it down at one point, but mate, you especially, first and foremost, big thanks need to go to you for being a massive part of this relaunch podcast, and taking care of hosting and recording, and not just contributing, but bringing all the other stuff on board, as well as the Championship Chronicle series.
Mate, I wish that you'd say these lovely things about me all through the year instead of just on the anniversary.
Yeah.
No, mate, but in all seriousness, no, it's fantastic to be a part of an ever-growing team. It's a wonderful group that we've got that do the podcast. We've got a wonderful group of listeners as well. We've had some exciting times over the last 3 years. I mean, I've managed to speak to a number of players that I've idolised, and never thought I'd have that opportunity. So this podcast has certainly brought about some fanboy opportunities to rub shoulders with players that play the sport that I love.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, mate, not just you. We do have to thank, obviously, all the other contributors that that have joined the team. A couple have come on and then had to step away due to other commitments. But for all past contributors, for all current contributors, and for all of our listeners and subscribers, we do really sincerely want to thank you for a great 3 years of Simpsons references and dad jokes. And I hope it goes for much longer than another 3 years. That's that's pretty much all I can say. You sort of stole the march on the opening question a little bit, which is one that you suggested, and you sort of covered it off in your little bit there. But what's your favourite podcast memory?
Well, as I mentioned there, I mean, I've had the opportunity to sit down and have breakfast with Taylor Regan and Q Yarlins, to have Q pre-planned walk out when we started talking about Phil Stubbins with a big grin on his face. That was something very interesting. But mate, I've got to say the highlight has probably been being able to do episode number 50 with Griff, and also our big end of year podcast last year. That was really good fun as well. But Griff probably steals a show, and I suppose I'd probably throw the Championship Chronicles in there as well. That was that's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, you've pretty much stole my thunder, as I said when you suggested this question. That
well, we were all going to answer the same, weren't we?
All the contributors are going to answer that, having Griff on the 50th episode. But I probably also have to really, my favourite development, I suppose, in the podcast is expanding into the Facebook Live videos as well. Mm. So, and that sort of culminated last season in being able to do a live Facebook Live broadcast presenting the players with fans awards, which were voted for by the listeners and users on NewcastleFootball.net. So, that sort of gives a really big indication of the level of engagement we've been able to get with this podcast, and now we just basically look at trying to grow it as much as possible.
Absolutely, mate. No, that's another very good good achievement that we've had in a very short period of time.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, we probably need to stop patting ourselves on the back and get into actually talking about some football. So Round 20 sees us travelling to Windless Spotless Stadium at Homebush to take on the Western Sydney Wanderers this Friday night. Kickoff is scheduled for 7:50 p.m. Dave, hit us with some stats.
coming right at you, mate. 17 matches between the two teams. The Jets have won 4, the Wanderers 8. There have been 5 draws. In Sydney, there have been 8 matches. The Jets have won 3 matches of their 4 down there. The Wanderers have won 3, and there's been 2 draws. Goals in the fixture, it's 19 to the Jets, 25 to the Wanderers. Our last result was a 4-0 win at McDonald Jones Stadium in round 12. That is also our biggest win in history against the Wanderers. Recent form, the Jets have got 10 points, or earned 10 points from their previous, from the last possible 15. The Wanderers have earned 7. They've actually got a player who's scored more goals than our top scorer. Oriel Riera scored 9. Andrew Nabu is our leading scorer with 8. And, yeah, we can get into some of the talking points a bit later.
Yeah, well, no, we probably should do that now. But, I mean, that sort of thing jumping out at me at the moment is that we seem to have a better record against them away from home than we do from home. That biggest margin you mentioned was our only solitary win that we had at McDonald Jones Stadium. Our biggest margin, but yeah, like I said, our only win. So we seem to travel away to the Wanderers a lot better than we do at home. So that's probably gives us a good feeling about this match.
Absolutely, mate. It's almost like a Brisbane type scenario arising there with the Wanderers, where we tend to perform better against them away from home, as you said. 3 wins is certainly nothing to be to turn our nose up. It's very even down in Sydney. I don't know why, because the Wanderers fans are, traditionally have been quite quite noisy, quite vocal's same as noisy.
Boisterous. Vociferous.
Yeah, intimidating is probably the word I'm looking for, actually. So...
Allegedly.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, what do you think? Well, it's a strange sort of record that we're building.
Yeah, it is. And, these records against the so-called big metro teams, mainly the 3 big ones, are Wanderers, Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory. Sydney FC is a different kettle of fish, obviously. We seem to struggle against them, doesn't matter where we play them. But Melbourne Victory, we seem to have the wood on them at home and do fairly well against them away, whereas with the Wanderers, they seem to have the wood on us at, for their away, our home, until the most recent game. But we seem to be able to do a lot better with them when we're playing them at their place. So and of course the whole not being in Parramatta Stadium at the moment, changeover of coach, so rumours of unrest in the dressing room with a number of players. Some of these things can play into our hands, although, like we mentioned, their previous 2 games they've had 2 wins, but they were against some fairly weak opposition. So this game looks to be the pick of this split round, as far as I'm concerned, even though, 3 of the games have already been played already. You'd probably think that this game could be a bit of a barn burner.
Yeah, and the stats can probably be a little bit deceiving, because we've lost, drawn and lost our last 3 games down in Sydney. It was a 2-0 loss back in season 11. Aguilar and Bridge were the scorers on that day. Last year we played down there twice. The first game was when Bugard scored in the 81st and Hull scored that really soft free kick against Andrew Redmayne in the 88th minute to force a 2-all draw. And then we lost out at Campbelltown when Lachlan Scott and Joshua Soterio scored as well. So recent form hasn't been fantastic down in Sydney, away against Western Sydney.
Yeah, well, hopefully the trials and tribulations they're currently experiencing will play more of a part than anything historical, as obviously we know how much Emma loves the historical effect of our stats affecting the present. So we won't sort of go into that too much more, because I'm sure she's, while listening to this, is throwing things at a phone going, no, it makes no difference. All right. Yeah, sorry, Sozem. All right, so obviously at time of recording, the squads and everything haven't been released, but current news, I did see an NBN report last night that Vujica is struggling with an injury. News today is... Yeah, and news today is that Canner is definitely going to miss it with a hamstring issue. I did hear it mentioned somewhere, I can't remember where it was, that Vargas is an outside chance of possibly being named in the squad. And obviously, Georgevski returns from his one-week suspension from the last game that he served. So, taking all those factors into consideration, we still have a fairly strong. We will still have a fairly strong squad and a number of players that will be able to slot in for those players, and we shouldn't end up losing too much in quality across the park.
No, we shouldn't. I think that it's already been indicated that Georgevski is going to return at left back, so that means Hoffman will retain his place on the right. When it comes to Vargas, I think as well, and America's already dismissed that, that he was originally penciled in to return against Sydney FC, but according to Ernie, if he's going to achieve that goal and play in that match, he needs to really step up his recovery a bit further. So I think that the calls or the rumours around Vargas returning for that game were a bit premature.
Yeah, more media talk than anything else?
I think social media talk, to be honest, mate.
Yeah.
That's where I first read the rumour. And it's just grown from there. But, I was sceptical from the beginning. And Ernie Merrick's come out and shut it down. As far as I'm concerned, it's a non-issue.
Yep. Well, so it's going to be fairly important for us to, and obviously Ernie Merrick has done this all through the season, fielding his strongest possible lineup and keeping the momentum going. I think it's especially important in this game, considering the fact that Wanderers have been able to pick up a little bit of momentum on their own. As we said, it's against two fairly shit teams at the moment. So how much you can read into that, obviously this week's going to go a long way in seeing whether the Wanderers are just, you know, flat track bullies and they're not necessarily going to be able to you know, keep that momentum going where it counts, or whether they actually have managed to turn their season around.
I didn't manage to catch the game against Wellington on the weekend, but from all accounts, Economides really made a difference to the team. I think he's going to be the player that we've got to not focus on, but we've got to stop him getting the ball and also try and prevent the service getting into Riera, who, with his head, has been phenomenal the last couple of weeks. He had scored a good header against the Mariners, and he scored an equally good header against Wellington. But look, I think in terms of teams, we're going to provide a much bigger test for this Wanderers team than the Central Coast and Wellington, who were, unfortunately really didn't put up much of a fight for them by all accounts.
No. We have talked previously on this podcast when it's cropped up for us about the advantages and disadvantages of having a week off or some sort of a break during the season. How do you think that this particular break's going to affect us this time around?
I think we needed a rest. I mentioned on the previous pods that we looked leggy, that we were due a break. We could have done with the players getting some R&R and going away or whatever they wanted to do. And they had 4 days off, which was well deserved. Though they didn't travel very far, they still had some quite taxing games and came away with the points, or the majority of the points, which is what we were hoping to achieve. I think that it will work well. I think that it gives Roy O'Donovan a bit more time to regain some fitness, regain some strength in his groin, and make sure that he's fully overcome the injury. It's a shame that Cantor's injury hasn't had the time to heal, but certainly some knocks and niggles would have benefited. But, I mean, mate, I can also see the other side of the coin. Where do you sit?
Well, I pretty much agree with you. I think that the break came at a good time for us, but it's just going to be a big question as to whether we end up coming back. We need to start this game fairly strongly, and that's the first sort of 15-20 minutes is going to be a big indicator as to whether the break's actually been beneficial for us. We come out with a bit more vigour and we push right from the start. Or whether we come out a little bit more timid and you know, like I said, the time off can work positively and negatively. So I'm just hoping that it's going to be affecting us in a positive manner, and we'll hopefully be able to come out with the It would be really good for us to put in a performance similar that we saw the last time we played the Wanderers, because I think a lot of us have pretty much highlighted that as one of the strongest performances that the team has put in so far this season. It would be great if we could manage to put a similar performance in this game.
Do you know who I reckon is probably going to also help is Pato Rodriguez. He looked a bit tired the last game that he did play, and some training under his belt, working on combinations with the players in and around him, that's going to be a benefit to the Jets as well. It's probably come at a good time.
Yeah, well, although having said that, spending his days training in 35, 40 degree heat, I don't know how used to those sorts of conditions he is, but that's also going to be a big test. So, it might have been taking a bit of acclimatisation and just... The big advantage with that time off is that's going to allow more time for Potato to do more combinations with his fellow players, and hopefully we can see a really strong partnership with Roy fairly quickly that we saw with Vargas when he came in, because it took Vargas pretty much no time at all. It has taken Rodriguez a little bit of time to seem to get into the groove, and I don't know how you've seen it. I didn't get to see the last game. I only heard it on radio while I was driving. But it seemed to me that he seems to be getting to a similar wavelength, but not on the same wavelength all of the time.
Yeah, I don't think, go back to a point you made about him training, he's certainly not going to be a roast spud, because if you follow his Instagram, he's been spending a lot of time cooling down at the beach, so he's actually going to be there a washed potato.
There's your dad jokes. Three more years of this, people.
You all love it. Don't pretend you don't. That game he was pretty quiet. We really didn't utilise him in the first half, and it took us a while to actually come to him to a point. We certainly, with Valeri running around and Matias Sanchez, who, he goes down if you just look at him. There was a fear that Rodriguez was going to get mashed, but...
How many other potato-based puns can we fit into this?
Oh, mate, I'll see how many I can... I'm just going to bring up taste.com and see what I can...
There's a lot of little gems coming out.
You're a chip off the old block.
Yeah, I was going to say, get chipping away. This is going to drive a wedge between us.
Oh, jeez. I'm going to grab my jacket and leave. Kantorovsky, he's going to be a tough one to replace.
And I'd like to thank all of our listeners that have currently unsubscribed to the podcast feed, just on the back of this. I go away for a few weeks, and look what happens. You've just... The pun is puntastic. Well, let's get into the lineups. Like I said, we mentioned the players that were coming in, the players that are out. So with Kantorovsky out, you used to see a straight swap with Wayne Brown partnering Yugarkovich.
No, I don't, actually.
A lot of people seem to be still very unsure of Brown. He had the times we have seen him, he has performed pretty well, but a lot of people seem to have his opinion coloured of him by his performances early on in the season. Or is it more of a, he's inconsistent, he might be good one game and he might be crap the next?
I guess it's the approach that Ernie Merrick wants to take, and how much to the structure of the team he wants to change. Because if he's going to bring Wayne Brown in, he's a straight swap for Kantorovsky, but Wayne Brown doesn't push as far forward and support Yugarkovich in the midfield and provide a square option. He's more of a backwards option for Yugarkovich in that midfield. I actually think that he's going to change Stevie's role this week and put him in as the holder and bring Riley McGree in and play McGree in Yugarkovich's role to be able to get in there and support Dimi. McGree's been really impressive the last the two appearances that he's made. He scored a goal, and I don't know why people are saying that he's provided an assist. He hasn't provided a bloody assist, people. Get that right.
Has McGree played in that position as far as you're aware?
Yeah, he played there for Adelaide. So he certainly is capable of doing it. But the other option that we've got there as well would be Nick Cowden. He could come into that role, but I don't think that that's going to be the case. I probably see more of a bench role for Nick and Wayne, and we'll see McGree start.
You've also got Johnny Katrumbis as well, who can play in that defensive midfield role.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Johnny
Katrumbis. It's probably also going to be down to who is the performer at training during the week, and who I'm sure that Ernie's going through a number of scenarios and seeing who responds to them and who doesn't. So, do you see Georgievski coming? You see Georgievski coming straight back into the starting lineup, and you do think that Hoffie's going to push forward?
100%. No, I don't think Hoffie's going to push forward. I think Hoffie's going to stay at right back. I see Georgievski coming back in at left back for Lachlan Jackson, with Vojica out. That's the change that I'd be making. The guy Georgievski's a more than capable fullback, and we need to put him on Economides to shut him down.
Yeah, well, the Vojica thing was only mentioned on the NBN report, and I've seen
it's
nothing.
It's been in the Herald as well
today.
Yesterday, that he's basically been ruled out with tonsillitis already.
Right, fair enough. So he's pretty much okay. Fair enough. So that's so Georgievski and Hoffman on the wings. We've got on the fullback roles, keeping with obviously Bugard and Topor Stanley. You don't think Merrick's going to spring a surprise and look to freshen up the centre of defence at all?
Absolutely not. Those two have been pretty much rock solid all year, and I think it would be very Ernie Merrick like to make a change there. They'll start.
Jack Duncan obviously performed brilliantly against the Victory in the last game. Do you think that pretty much cements him that number one jersey, or do you think that Moss will be given a chance to stake his claim?
No, I think Moss is back to being second choice at the moment. Jack's performance after I bagged him and said that Glenn Moss needed to start was excellent. So I could bag him again, perhaps, and maybe that will bring another stunning performance, but Jack certainly doesn't deserve to be dropped. I mean, would you be making a change?
No, I'd be keeping Jack Duncan right where he is.
Very good.
Quite personally. Yep, okay. So Jugarkovic and you think McGree in the midfield?
Yeah, that's my choice. Are you I'm sensing you're disagreeing with me?
No, I'm just thinking what the other options could be. I don't know. I think McGree works a lot better as a more attacking player. I don't know whether having him that far back is going to curtail his more attacking abilities. So I'd like to see McGree a bit further forward rather than being sort of wasted in that sort of. Well, it depends. Ernie's sort of fluctuated between having one of the defensive midfielders holding and the other one playing more as a number eight than so rather than playing two sixes, he sort of had two players in that six position, but they'll sort of swap around and do six and eight in sort of alternating fashion. And from what you said, you don't think that Wayne Brown sort of really accomplishes a great deal in that. So does Ernie just purely go with Wayne Brown playing the sixth role and then have Jugarkovic licensed to roam forward? I don't know. But it's certainly a good headache to have with a number of options, and rather than just, you know, once Ken is out, the team falls to pot, which is usually, on previous seasons, is usually what would happen when he stayed in. But no, it's been fantastic to have Canner coming back this season and showing us what we saw that meant those years ago when he was being scouted by Bayern. All right, so I think the rest of the players up front pretty much pick themselves. You're thinking Rodriguez, Petratos, Naboot, and O'Donovan.
Yeah, I think that's Dimi Petratos centre, Pato out on the left, Naboo on the right, and Roy up front. They really pick themselves, but I think that it's going to be interesting that we're going to see how much hassleback Pato has to get around and give Georgievski a bit of defensive cover this week.
Yeah,
that was another Spud reference, and you didn't get it.
No, I didn't. No, I let.
Thank
I let
you to that. Everyone who laughed at home.
yeah. Tweet us if you laugh. I bet you would get no tweets. The other thing that's going to be interesting is with Roy coming back and with I mean, Naboot's pretty much carried the can for the attacking prowess of this team while he's been out. Does that sort of change Andrew Naboot's role in this team a little bit? Do you think he might be nominated as a sort of a right wing sort of player? But I think he's going to have a lot of license to cut in and maybe cut in and cut in behind Roy as more of a support striker. So playing Roy as a number nine and then maybe having Naboot as a false nine.
Certainly when the ball was out in the left against the Victory game, and I don't know if you managed to watch it back again, but Naboot was really... He was completely out of position, you'd almost call it. It was a very fluid structure that he... very fluid license that Naboot had. He was showing up next to Roy O'Donovan. He was showing up on the left wing when Paddo was out on the left as well. He was just running around all over the place and almost a too free or too liberal with his license, I felt, to move about. I certainly think that he's got the ability to provide that extra option, very similar to what Hoffman was doing when Naboot was leading the line. But I think that he'll look back and probably have a little bit of one-on-one coaching and just look to rein it in slightly, because if we do, or if we don't, Raul Llorente is out there and he's quite a good left back, and I think that he'll take advantage of that, and that's where Hoffy in particular could get exposed.
Yeah, we've got to be careful we don't get boiled. All right. Yeah, that was a stretch, I know. All right, so the bench. Obviously, if Adam McGree and Brown, whoever gets picked to start, the other one is pretty much a lock for the bench.
Yep.
But what other players do you see apart from Moss being given? Do you think that Ernie's going to go with a pretty attacking bench to give him some more options?
I think he'll go with balance. Ernie, I'd say, will also look for a bit of versatility on the bench as well. I expect to see Lachlan Jackson on the bench. So that's Glenn Moss, Lachlan Jackson. I expect Wayne Brown. So that's three. We've got two more. I would be bringing Joey Champness in.
Yep.
And just having a look through my list.
Maybe Johnny Kay.
Johnny Kay.
Is that more of a... Too many defensive players.
Johnny really hasn't been in the team the last couple of weeks, been in and around that selection. Costa Petrados was previously. Chabal again has been missing for a few weeks. I'm looking at possibly Cowburn. Could be that player that slots on
yep.
in.
Yep,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, Cowburn, Champness, Brown, and Jackson, along with Moss. So that would be my pick.
I'd say that's pretty going to be pretty close to the mark. I'd agree with most of that. All right. The only thing I would sort of think that would be, Chabal or Costa Petrados or Thurgate, maybe just to chuck one of the young players on the bench and maybe have them as an option just if we need someone to be, just pace and speed in the final sort of 10 minutes or so.
Possibly.
Switching to the Wanderer side of things, obviously, as we mentioned, that they're gathering a little bit of momentum. Do you class this as a big test, or should we go into this game with confidence?
I think we should have an element of confidence to us, but I don't think we can underestimate the Wanderers. They've had another 8 matches under their belt since Gombau has come into the team, and he's starting to settle on a proper lineup that is going to be his first choice. I mean, we've seen the return of some fringe players under previous management structures like Steve Lustica. We've also seen the introduction of not Keanu Backus, his brother.
Kieran.
Kieran Backus, or which one's which?
I don't know.
We've seen the younger Backus brother. I'm sorry, that's embarrassing.
Well, we can always ask the around the block guys.
Yeah, so we've seen their introduction as well into the team. So I think that there's a level of stability that's coming into their team. And as I mentioned a few times, Economides has been, in his one game so far that I've seen, has been very attack-minded. So, yeah, we can't underestimate them. We can't underestimate them at home. They've also had the consistency of playing last week, so, and I wouldn't say that they were particularly strained or stretched as a result. No injuries.
Yep.
Riera's starting to score, so yeah, we've got to take this game certainly at face value and look, not underestimate them.
Yep, definitely. And we've pretty much covered off in dispatches most of the other questions I had written down for the Wanderer side of things. So we'll jump straight to the prediction. Yeah, no, that's fine. No, we've covered it off, so that's all good. What's your prediction?
Well, for those that listen to the Destruction in the Box podcast, I did. They do a weekly bet, and I nominated that the Jets were going to keep their first away clean sheet in 30. Well, it's been 31 games since we kept our last away clean sheet. Ferns, do you remember what game that was that we kept our last clean sheet?
Away from home.
Yeah.
Possibly a game against Brisbane?
Nope.
No.
No, even better than that. Even better than that. Leaves a much better taste in the mouth.
Mariners?
Yes, it was. Stephen Ugarkovich scored in a 1-0 win that was our record-breaking win down in Gosford. So that was exciting. But I think that we are... I actually think we're good for our breaking that record. I'm going to say 2-0.
I'm thinking more of a 3-1. I think we may hit the lead early, then get pegged back, but then go ahead and score two more goals. So I think we'll end up finishing 3-1 victors in that game. What's your bold prediction?
For Jets to keep a clean sheet, I think that's pretty bold given
it's
what
been 37 games. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Jets to keep a clean sheet.
Yep, Jets to keep a clean sheet. That's bold enough for me.
All right, no worries. What's my bold prediction? I'm predicting that Roy will score two goals in this game.
Okay.
That's my bold prediction. He didn't score at all last week, and he's probably going to be itching to get off the mark pretty quickly. So yeah, I'm picking Roy to score twice.
Excellent.
All right, no worries. Well, that's put a pin in that game and move on to the W League match that took place on the weekend. Unfortunately, the girls, despite a heroic effort, went down 3-2 in extra time to Sydney FC on Saturday? Saturday.
Saturday, yep.
Saturday at Leichhardt Oval. Now, I didn't actually get to watch or listen to a lot of this game. I was actually between Sydney and Newcastle moving house. So I only had snippets of the sort of last 40 minutes or so on ABC Radio. Well, it's a fantastic call from those guys, by the way. But we went down 2-0 in the first half in what was a bit of a... a strong Sydney FC display before we got reduced to 10 men before halftime. What did you think of the red card? Most people seem to be in agreement that it was not warranted.
No, it was a cardable offence. I guess it was deemed to be a reckless challenge from behind on Devanna. They certainly wasn't denying a goal scoring opportunity. I'm not particularly conversant with the specific changes to the laws around the issuing of red cards, but I certainly thought watching it that it was harsh. Brewer certainly didn't deserve to be sent, in my opinion.
Was it not necessarily being sent off for the denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, but more for the tackle itself?
Yeah, it was certainly for the tackle itself. We were 2-0 down at the time, and Devanna was through on goal. She still had two other defenders around her, but I personally didn't think that it was... I thought that was definitely worthy of a yellow, certainly worthy of a yellow. I thought the red was probably a bit too harsh.
All right. Well, the girls battled back brilliantly in the second half and capitalised on a goalkeeping howler in the final minutes to get it back to 2-2 and push the match into extra time, where unfortunately we conceded a Lisa Devanna goal and unfortunately we weren't able to affect the scoreboard anymore. So the girls were knocked out at the semi-final stage of the W League final season. Finals series. Sydney FC go on to meet Melbourne City this weekend in the grand final on Sunday. How did you see the game overall and how do you assess the W League season for the Jets side of things?
if I look at the first, the goals that the Jets conceded in the first half, I'll certainly be disappointed with the goal that Caitlin Ford scored. It was a bit of a breakaway, and she really sold two Jets down. She sold a perfect dummy, and you can see why she is a Matilda. But it was a lovely finish, but they certainly would be disappointed with the manner in which they defended that goal. The second one was a shot from outside the box. It was a good goal, but again, we would have hoped to have cleared it. But the game really changed, and it probably helped that the red card was issued just before half time. It allowed Craig Deans 15 minutes to reassess what he did, was going to do at that stage, and he didn't make any halftime substitutions, but he did go to two up top, three in the middle, and moved Aaron Gilliland from a front three and moved her back to right back, which is her position that she plays when she plays back home. The Jets, Gilliland won a corner. It was really an uncontested corner. No one wanted to win it, and we got back in and we got a sniff, but the goalkeeping howler in the 92nd minute that gifted the goal to Tara Andrews was unforgivable. Sydney would have been absolutely kicking themselves. And
yep.
Credit's got to go to first of all, Andrews for the vision to pick Gilliland out, Gilliland for continuing to chase the ball just after her shot, but also the level head shown by Katie Stengel to hold the ball up and pass it on to the free Tara Andrews, who was in a better position for a shot. Many players in that case would have just tried to take it on themselves, but she laid it off and allowed Andrews to score. And I had my daughter on my knee watching the game at my house, and I've cracked up laughing, and my brother and Pete were there as well, and poor old Lauren started crying with the manner with which we were going. And it was unfortunate that the Jets goal the Jets conceded that ended up costing them the game came from a Jets corner. So it was a breakaway again by Devanna, yep, who again showed her class to break it away. The team really, though, to come back from 2-0 down with the player down was such so encouraging, and they showed so much heart. They really must be proud of the way in which they put themselves about in this series, in their semi-final. They did the shirt proud, and it's certainly a platform on which Deans can build next year, particularly if he can bring back the four these players. On a whole, it's got to be seen as a success this season. We scored a number of goals, which has been our problem in previous years. We reached the finals. We were competitive in against every team except really Melbourne City this year. So Katie Stengel was a standout. Aaron Gilliland coming back again. Our four visa imports were fantastic. They really provided a strong spine to the team. And to have Emily Van Egmond as well with her Matildas experience, as well as Gemma Simon and now Hannah Brewer, who's been called up into the train on squad, has been an excellent recruitment there by the Jets. So a strong platform on which we can build next year, Fernsy.
Absolutely, and I'd echo pretty much everything that you just said, and it's been something that we've wanted to expand this podcast with, covering off the W League as well as the Youth League results, and talking about the games a little bit more in depth rather than just mentioning them in passing. So it's been a fantastic season for the girls. They did the region proud, and it's great that the turnaround at the men's side of things has also coincided with the women getting stronger and becoming more of a force in the competition. So we just hope that we can bring back a lot of the players. Obviously, as Craig Deans mentioned, the season is way too short. He'd love to play 27 games and be able to keep these players for a lot longer and build a proper team. But unfortunately, the W League season is what it is. So a lot of those players will be now heading overseas to the American Soccer League or European Women's Soccer Leagues, where they will get more game time, and that will only help the players develop their games. And we just hope that the Jets are going to be able to nail down a lot more of those players than we have in the past, because I think there's been a fair bit of turnover in our W League teams over the season, so it would be nice to see a little bit more stability on that side of things with the girls, so that we can see a little bit more of those players more often, rather than, you know, oh, they had a really great season, but, you know, now they're playing for Sydney FC, or they got snapped up by Melbourne City or someone like that. We really want the girls to stay with Newcastle and hopefully build a really good a dynasty with that. But you know, we'll just have to wait and see. Although, if the girls, especially the imports Instagrams or anything to go by, they love Newcastle. So hopefully they'll be back.
Well, yeah, and not just that, mate. Hopefully the success that the team have shown this year makes us as a more attractive option for other Matildas to come to our team as well.
Yeah.
So most teams have two or three, maybe four Matildas in their teams, which is something that we can boast, I guess, with Emily Van Egmond. Gemma Simon's been involved in recent times, but it's not something that we've really been able to boast in the past. So the fact that the girls are based at Number 2 Sports Ground, and their success, and they've seen the way in which the club have integrated all teams within that are under their banner, the Newcastle Jets banner, has certainly got to be encouraging. And the fact that we've also given Emily Van Egmond a 2-year deal, I mean, this is something that hopefully makes us an attractive proposition in future seasons.
Yep, definitely. And probably just the last thing is probably that the W League is in a sort of a unique position compared to the men's game, where there's such a huge disparity between the A-League and the other men's leagues around the world. There's really not a huge number of women's leagues, and they're all on a fairly decent level footing due to the disparity, I suppose, in investment between the men's and the women's game. It seems to be more evenly spread. So hopefully the girls, especially the imports, and the girls from here in Australia who go over and play over there, will be able to entice more of those players back, and we'll see the quality of the W League steadily increase, and hopefully that heralds the addition of some more teams and some more games and a longer season. So that's only going to, because that's probably the one big area of opportunity for this league. Rather than, you know, making it a really short, sharp season, they need to draw it out a little bit more and try and build something on, because the opportunity's there for, you know, a competition in Australia starting off on a fairly even keel, with leagues across the rest of the globe, and not being so far behind the eight ball as the A-League is. The other leagues have been going for, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, some 100 plus years, whereas, you know, the A-League's only 13 years old and relatively speaking is a bit of a minnow in the Australian sporting landscape. The W League, the women's leagues, on the other hand, it seems to be a lot more. They're all sort of seem to be more of an even footing. So hopefully that's an area in future that the FFA, if they ever get their finger out and actually start fixing the men's game, they might even look at, you know, throwing a little bit of a glance the women's way and actually look at building that competition to develop and grow and try and keep pace with what they're going to be spending across the rest of the globe in these women's leagues, because women's sport is coming on in leaps and bounds in the last probably 3 or 4 years, and it's only going to grow exponentially, I think, in the coming decade. And we really need to make sure that we are at the forefront, or otherwise our Matildas team is going to drop away. We need to make sure we keep the strength of the league growing and developing, so that we can continue to churn out really, really, really good players for our national team as well as for the national competition.
You're here.
All right. Two other bits to cover off. So we sort of mentioned in passing the major news for this week was that we re-signed Jets Nick Cowburn and Jason Hoffman to new deals, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Cowburn for a one-year deal. I think that the Jets are probably taking the approach that they did with Candle last year. He's sort of on the fringes, and they'll be looking to see whether next year he can push on or whether he remains as a fringe player. It's a big year for Nick next year, but it's good to have him re-signed. Personally, I'm disappointed that we re-signed Hoffman to 1 year. I thought that he's worthy of two. There were rumours, obviously, mentioned in the Herald that he was being targeted by Wellington Phoenix, being a new dad and also having the family, being the connection to Newcastle probably helped to sway him. But I certainly thought Hoffey was worthy of 2 years personally. But it's great to have him re-sign. I thought he was worthy of more.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I mean, there's nothing to say they can't keep re-signing him to a rolling contract this time next season. But
or if there's an option or something like
that. Yeah, possibly. But I think they're probably wary of giving players too long contracts. I think these clubs have been burnt in the past by signing players and maybe sort of not hedging their bets a little. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen with Hoffey, but we did sign Wayne Brown fairly quickly to a longer deal, and he seems to have fallen away quite a bit since that's happened. So I suppose the Jets are probably smartly trying to balance things, and they'll target the more the players that they feel are more first teamers. I think Hoffey's been a first teamer more out of necessity than anything else, but he's certainly taken his chance with both hands, and you're right, he probably could definitely warrant a 2 year deal, but a 12 month deal is probably all in all not a bad result. We keep him here for another year, and then if he continues to ride the curve upwards, then I think that, you know, there's probably no reason why he couldn't be re-signed to a longer deal this time next season.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, and as it currently stands, we've got quite a few players that are we're actually looking at quite a low number of a low turnaround this year. Traditionally, we go through sort of six or seven players in a season, but the players that are still currently off contract will be off contract at the end of the year, Nigel Bougard, well, Devante Clute, but Devante has since parted.
Pato. Headed to Blacktown City.
Yep, Pato, Costa Petrados, Ronald Vargas, Angus Thurgate. I reckon that we'll probably end up offering him
a youth contract.
Riley McGree, who's on loan, and Alessi. So that's Alessi, Vargas, Petrados, Rodriguez, and Bougard. So that's going to be a really low level of turnover potentially. Needless to say, we could have players that are transferred out, but we're looking at quite a low level of turnover this year.
Yeah, low level of turnover, but three or four of those players are very crucial to what we've built this season, and you'd hope that, you know, definitely the Vargas, Rodriguez, Bougard, whether they give Bougard another year or not, I think he's done definitely enough to warrant an extension. But we would want to see, probably look at seeing how Vargas recovers from his injury before we start throwing any more money at him. But Rodriguez, I think, will probably end up signing before the end of the season, especially with that spot freed up by the departure of Devante. So.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
All right, no worries. Now, this week saw the release of Episode 7 in the Championship Chronicle series, and all I've got written down here, Dave, is that it was a fucking triumph. I'm not going to bleep that. I know you've released censored versions, but it can't really be described any other way, mate. That Episode 7, you sort of said to us in private that it was, and I think you've even said it on this podcast, that it was one of your it was hands down your favourite episode of the series, and I think a lot of people are agreeance with you.
Yeah, the feedback has been very humbling. It's been nice to read the comments, and you know that I'm not looking through the series with tainted glasses myself and thinking that something is awesome when it's really not. So the fact that people are listening to it and they're enjoying it, and that they're getting to see this episode really epitomizes why I wanted to do the project, Ferns. I wanted to get those stories that we wouldn't have heard, I mean, or that peek behind the curtain in a way. And I think that this episode delivers that in spades, because you get to go to the inner sanctum of the hotel, you get to go to the inner sanctum of the dressing room prior to the game. You get to hear what the players were thinking and what they were seeing as they were around town. But, mate, I know something that was quite personal to you was the story that Gav, the time that Gav gave me speaking about the development of the giant gold banner, the TIFO, and what the players felt about that as well. I mean, I mean, you quite enjoyed it by the sounds of things.
Yes, I did, and it sort of brought back quite a few memories, actually, of that week, getting it ready and going down to a going down to the undisclosed school gym down in Western Sydney on the day before to try and finish it off and make sure it was all ready to go, and you know, was, I remember it being oppressively hot. What Gav mentioned was correct. My missus was heavily pregnant at the time, and she was helping out. So, I don't know whether a really hot gym with fumes from spray adhesive cans really sort of did well for a pregnant girl. But everything turned out okay. And just listening, I suppose I was more affected by the response that it got from the players, from the coaches, and from Remo and Con. That story that Remo mentioned, where him and Con were pretty much holding each other and shedding a tear, because they were right. We hadn't let anybody know that this was happening. There was only a few. There was people. I mean, there were some people in the inner circle that sort of that weren't involved in the TIFO, knew something was going on, but that sort of didn't really get widely disseminated. It was just sort of okay. Well, if it comes off, it comes off, and it took. It was a couple of weeks in planning, and it took a solid week of work every night for the guys that were up here in Newcastle, because I was still obviously living in Sydney at the time for that to come off. So, yeah, it was to hear that it had that effect, and it gave the players an extra, you know, 10% or 12%, and just hearing that the way it affected them, it was really touching, and yeah, it was fantastic.
Oh, that's great, mate. That's fantastic. It's it made my day, mate.
Yep, definitely. Day. All right. Well, I think we've chatted on for long enough. We've talked over pretty much all we needed to touch on.
Chatted.
We've chatted. Yes, we have chatted. There's been potato-based puns and a couple of dad jokes thrown in there. I wait with bated breath to hear what your Simpsons reference is going to be as we fade this out. But if you need to get in contact with us, guys, please get onto the website. You can find all our previous episodes at newcastlefootball.net/podcast. You can find all the previous episodes of the Championship Chronicles there as well, especially the, like we mentioned, that episode 7 is a triumph, and people need to listen to that. So I would be definitely sharing that on your social medias and spreading the word, because the more people we can get that out to, the better it is. And there's a lot of stories on there that people won't necessarily have ever heard before. So it's a fantastic opportunity for that. If you need to get in contact with us, you can email us podcast@newcastlefootball.net. You can get in contact with Bodes. The fanzine will probably be looked at in the off season. I don't know what's happening with that at the moment. Bodes has been a bit snowed under with work, so that's why the fanzine hasn't sort of appeared in the last couple of weeks. If you want to get in touch to offer some help or some articles or any of that sort of details, fanzine@newcastlefootball.net. You can get in touch with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @JetStreamNewey, or you can jump on the forums at newcastlefootball.net. There's a Jetstream sub forum in there, and there's also the Jetstream podcast thread in the main forum, the Jets and Australian A-League forum. All right, Dave, that pretty much wraps it up. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you for choosing me, Ferns.
There's your Simpsons reference. And thanks very much for listening, guys, and subscribing. We will be back next week when we're reviewing the game that takes place on Friday night against the Wanderers. But until then, go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Jesus. Where'd that come from?
I don't know.
Sounded like Dr. Evil. Not Dr. Evil. Who was the villain from Inspector Gadget?
Claw, wasn't it?
Dr. Claw? I think it was Dr. Claw. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll
get you next time, Gadget.
Yes,
next
that's it.
Next time.
Oh, throwbacks. We're expanding.